Welcome in to Over Underrated with one of your co-hosts, Fran, introducing the podcast. This episode, we are back down under looking at two Australian bands, In Excess and The Go-Betweens, chosen by, I guess, the editor and founder of Gods and the TV. And we had a lovely discussion about two mighty fine bands. But did all of us agree that they were underrated or overrated? Why not keep listening and find out?
Welcome to the Over Underrated podcast with Fran and Babs. Is it over or underrated?
It's another episode of Over Underrated with Fran and Babs. I am Babs, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Fran. How are we doing, Fran?
I have just finished Pilates, and I'm ready to podcast. I believe all the big podcasters have a Pilates and a meal deal beforehand, so I'm drinking my innocent smoothie. And Babs is jealous of the UK meal deals. Sorry, Babs.
Yes. You missed us talking about the price of food in Belgium and the price of food in the UK. Aren't you jealous that you missed out on that? But I do also have a Pilates-related story because, Fran, I have just come back from the osteopath who told me that I can now do Pilates again because, yeah, I should do it for the good of my back and only stop if I feel pain. So there we go. Look at us, the back pain broadcasters, Fran and Babs.
Two young, crazy kids with back pain. So, Babs, I should probably ask you, what have you been listening to this week?
I have been listening to music related to the last two gigs I went to. So on Friday, I went to Botanic and saw Jockstrap, who were fantastic. Mm-hmm. Crowd a bit crap, but there we go. But on Monday, I went to see IAG and her amazing support act, George Riley, one of the best support acts I've ever seen. And that was really phenomenal. The Belgian crowd was really warm. I'm getting the feeling that I think cold Belgian crowds are normally for rock concerts because there's a bit more electro and a bit more pop in IAG. They're a bit more willing to get involved. But even from the support act, which was just, you know, this person George Riley and their their synths, the little machine that I don't know the name of. They were getting really involved and she was really chatty and the crowd were like responding to her and I was like, I've never seen this. And IAG and Jockstrap might come up in my kind of top albums and top songs of the year, but I would really shout out George Riley for her very genre blending kind of somewhere between pop, electro, rap and R&B, like hints of Azalea Banks, but also something a bit softer. It's really, really good stuff. What about you?
Do you have like a song for a starting point for her at all? Or?
For George Riley? Well, the one that I saved first is one called SEX. So there we go. Start with that. Perfect. If you want to get a bit naughty, but if you want something a bit more smooth, maybe her song Desire.
Desire. Okay, yeah. Okay. I've not been listening to anybody who's a new artist. I have been listening to today of a band called The Cheaters with a song called The Swan from like 2014, maybe.
It's Cheaters, C-H-E-A, right?
Yeah.
I know those guys.
It's all very shoegazy. It came up like a song on my like best of something. I thought, oh yeah, shit, that song. So that's on repeat for the last 2 days. And for some reason, I had like a deep dive on the Wonder Stuff and decided I need to listen to every single Wonder Stuff album. And that's been my week.
Their EP Murasaki, I've just gone to look it up. I really love that EP and it's been a while since I've listened to it. So thank you, Fran.
You're
for
welcome.
Reawakening that.
For Cheaters. But we should probably introduce our guests for today. We are not alone. We have Bill Cummings from Gods in the TV podcast, magazine, online. Yep. Anything else I need to mention, Bill?
Show Me Magic is the podcast we do.
But, Show Me Magic.
God is in the TV zine is the website I've been doing for 20 years. So, yeah.
Wow, 20 years. Impressive.
Well, yeah, there's a bit of a story to it. I mean, I started off as a student journalist and I used to just put my reviews online. And this was in the era before blogs. So it was kind of in the web zine, drowning sound mm-hmm. sort of era. And then other people joined me and over the years it's got more professional. And now we're still here we're still going. We're an independent platform, really, for artists and writers, I suppose.
But yeah, so Bill, have you been listening to anything particular this week?
Yeah, apart from this artist we're discussing, I've been listening to Kareem Bailey Ray's album,
which is
quite surprising, you know, considering what I knew her for, sort of breezy soul pop. This one is just, yeah, there's a love of punk there that she delves into. Sort of alt pop, soul. It's a real melting pot. It's one of the albums of the year, I think, actually. And another band I've been listening to, a German synth pop band called Sparkling. And they're really fun, just sort of like really refreshing, upbeat stuff. Like I was trying to think what you'd compare them to, maybe sort of Junior Senior meets OMD or something really just like uplifting, which is not always my bag, but sometimes it's cool to, you know. And probably the third thing, Blonde Shell. Have you heard of this album?
Right.
Yeah, it's an artist called Blonde Shell from America. And yeah, it's kind of 90s influenced, I guess. Sort of a bit of grunge there, but it...
Yes, I saved her song Veronica Mars. I just looked this up. Yes.
Yeah, and there's a couple. There's one called Salad, and it's basically about a sort of a flight of fancy of poisoning your other half, basically. But I think there's a sort of a deeper, darker thing about he's been trying to control her, if that makes sense. So there's quite... Yeah, and it's just a really well... produced album, excellent songwriting. Probably you compare maybe Sharon Van Etten or sort of something like that.
Okay.
Previously discussed on the podcast on our Indie Folk episode, yes.
We have brought Bill here to discuss two bands, as we always do. We have the theme of Australia, yes.
Yeah. Again. Part three.
Who knew we'd have three episodes on Australia? And so we have an overrated band who I like, and Bill has chosen an underrated band that I didn't know much about. So can you introduce your two bands, Bill?
Yeah, it's INXS and The Go-Between.
Mm-hmm.
Overrated.
So, Bill, INXS, what your thoughts around the seminal Australian 80s/90s band?
I quite like them.
It's completely fine to like the favorite band.
I suppose the only, like, I was trying to think of like a criticism you could have of INXS, really, but like I think they're really energetic, fun songs, especially their sort of commercial peak. But I suppose delving a bit more into their back catalogue and stuff, I would say maybe a bit like there is a bit of a comparison with the Go-Betweens in terms of they both took a while to get to their to hit their stride, if that makes sense. And they're both sort of that kind of new wave. Probably the Go-Betweens much more esoteric early on, but they're both of that new wave pop thing, you know, from Australia at the beginning. And then they sort of found their voice and found their what they were really good at, I think. And I think INXS maybe, I don't know what you would say, but I think maybe Kick and X are like albums that are probably for me, like just listening to back to their stuff, are like ahead of everything else they did. And like there's a lot of great singles they've got, like like the one you picked out, which I think should have been on the playlist, actually, Don't Change, which was probably the first one that really made me think, actually, yeah, they've got something that's original, if that makes sense. Because some of the other ones I listened to earlier on were maybe a bit more bluesy rock, sort of almost Huey Lewis and the News sound. something like Listen Like Thieves. And then there's other tracks that are almost like trying to be almost 80s new wave, kind of almost Duran Duran. I was hearing on some of their early stuff. But then they really hit their stride, didn't they, with Kick, I think, which is a cracking album, I think. And I think the strength of Michael Hutchins' personality is, and this is probably going to be a question I'm going to ask later, but the strength of his personality is almost what makes... there's obviously good songwriting there as well, but his personality really does make them stand out, I think. And it's kind of stamped all over everything, isn't it?
Really. I mean, I guess most people in the world cannot name another member of NXS because of that. Well, it was Mike Hutchins.
Funnily enough, I could magnet. Because I saw that. I don't know if you remember. There was a after Michael Hutchins died, they did like a reality show. Yeah, and I saw that. So I
did not see that. Yeah. What's that? What was that about?
It was American, wasn't it? And it's to find a replacement for Michael Hutchins.
It was.
X-Factor style. That does ring a bell.
It was on VH1.
Yeah.
I think it was the Farris brothers, wasn't it, who were part of the judging team. Yeah. And so they found a guy called JD, didn't they, who was the Canadian singer who kind of took over for JD Fortune, his name was. He took over till 2011, and then they went on another year with somebody else and then they packed it in. So, yeah. You know, I've mixed feelings about that with Queen. You know, they're carrying on when you're so identified with one singer. Mm. I have kind of mixed feelings on that. You know, it's almost, can you really carry on when you're, will you ever be, you know what I mean? Will you ever be what you were when you've lost your iconic frontman? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, you can get away with it if it's only been 2 or 3 years into your career. But
well, Fran, we did do Meridian, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but exactly. So, can you name it?
I didn't really like them, but
people would not know a song after Fish left the band, though. So, if it's Genesis,
don't say
or
that to the fans who go to Santa Claus. But yes, okay.
Yeah, I think you can probably do it after a few years, but yeah, after 20 years, it's impossible. I think Genesis tried to do it again, didn't they? In the late 90s.
Well, Stranglers have done it, and it's not
impossible. But, just, I suppose. When it's so indelible, isn't it, as Freddie Mercury or Michael Hutchins, it's very hard to separate the two, I think. It's not to say you can't carry on, but I feel like there's almost, not to be too harsh on Queen, but I feel like there's almost like, you know, how long can you go on for, guys, you know?
So, Babs, NXS, what do you know? Do you know much more than Kick, or...?
Well, my first introduction to them was their greatest hits. Okay. I only listened to Kick for the first time about 3 years ago or something like that. So yeah, they were a family-friendly band. You know, if you listen to the podcast, you know that my family fought a lot over music. NXS was acceptable for both mum and dad. And yeah, I mean, like I said, I only really started exploring beyond that a few years ago. I had no idea they had an album called Shabu Shuba. I could not believe it. obviously, you know, we mentioned Michael Hutchins is iconic. He's gorgeous, and you know, that tragic figure thing that kind of haunts the spectre of the band, I guess. And I think Fran, you and I previously, either on or offline, I can't remember, talked about the amazing Richard Lowenstein documentary Mystify, which talked about his life. I don't know if you've seen that, Bill.
Yeah, it's very touching, and I was
extremely touching.
I suppose I was going to ask a question off that, because it's almost like I really enjoyed it, but is there a touch of sort of over romanticism about films like that, because it's almost because of his untimely death, does that kind of give NXS a sort of a tragic romantic vibe? Do you know what I mean, when you listen back to them, in a way? That's just a question I'm hanging out there, you know.
It's a good question, but actually I don't, when I listen to the music, well, let's say 4 out of the 5 of the songs on your playlist, I don't feel that, with one of them maybe a bit more. Because I think I'm going to be saying throughout this chat, Michael Hutchins is fit as hell. and he's so sexy. And that comes across so obviously in a lot of the songs that, yeah, I do focus on that more than, yeah.
There's still quite a few people who still think that he died through his auto-fixation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think after the documentary, you then realise obviously he had that brain injury and, you know, led to depression. Well, I guess both bands have lost a singer as well. So that's another link. So I got into NXS by complete accident. So I used to work in a luggage shop back in the 90s.
Not a record shop. I thought that was going to be the usual. Okay.
I say luggage. It also sold handbags, and I got pissed taken out of me. But anyway, they'd have one of those tapes which the company would send down because you couldn't play your own music. And it had one song on it. And I thought it was NXS. So I bought the best of NXS and was pissed off when that song was on it. It turned out later that song was Break It Down Again by Tears of Fears. So I don't know how I mistake Tears of Fears for NXS. But when I bought the best of NXS, I did then get into them. And I slowly would buy albums on, you know, for like £1 from a secondhand shop occasionally and found my way into NXS. And I bought the videos and all sorts. But I never really liked much of the pre-Kick era. I mean, I like Shabu Shabu because I'm a bit of a new wave. And I kind of like the art punky. I think when it first came out, they were a bit more pub rock I think they played with Noel Rogers.
Yeah, is it Listen Like Thieves, yeah. isn't it?
No, I think he did Original Sin, had that keyboard motif for it. And then after that, they then did Listen Like Thieves and they had a hit with What You Need, I think was their first funk hit in like America and the UK. And then Kick Off became massive success. And I didn't love X. I thought X felt like a Kick Part 2 for me. It's got some great songs on it. We're going to mention some songs today. And then I really loved their own Acton Baby. You know how Van Tett and the United had to change their image and everything. And so their Acton Baby Whatever You Are? I can't remember what the title is.
Welcome
to Wherever You Are, yeah. And that was one of my favourite albums of 1992, guys. But I think that was number one in the UK, and by then they'd lost America, because I guess America moved on to grunge and all sorts. And then I think the band just slipped down slowly. And what is really weird is that band played Wembley Stadium in 1991. And by 1994, Noel Gallagher was calling Mark Hudson's has-been on the Brits. Mm. It's that's been 3 years since they played Wembley Stadium. So it's amazing how far they stood down.
I suppose that rock thing, as in rock, kind of went out of fashion, didn't it? Because you could also think of a totally different band, but you could also think of how big Guns N' Roses were in the sort of early 90s. And then suddenly grunge, Nirvana just certainly sort of punctured that, really, in a way. Although they were still, around, but yeah, it's the zeitgeist, isn't it? I guess they've moved on.
Yeah, and I think Fitness has even tried to be a bit more rocky.
Yeah.
The song The Gift is their answer to grunge, I guess, in a way, don't mean? But it was never
I like The Gift, yeah.
But I think when Etiquette and Wasted came out, I think it got to number 16 in the UK charts, and it's pretty much over. Who knows what would have happened if Michael had lived on. But yeah, I think it's sad because obviously, he co-wrote most of the songs with Andrew Farris, and I feel sorry that he's not used at all. He must be a great songwriter.
Yeah,
it's sad that I've not really heard of him ever writing with anyone, that's a bit unfair. But if you go into your playlist, so we asked Bill to choose five songs for him to chat about, to discuss if the band are overrated. and we've been listening to his playlist all week or all day, depending on how much research he's done. So, Bill, what's your first track on your playlist?
New Sensation.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's sort of a really energetic, exciting song, really, isn't it? It just really bursts out the speakers. And that's kind of... it's almost emblematic, isn't it? We're the new sensation, almost. It's it's sort of exclaiming what they were at the time. It's interesting. There probably is a bit of a... Yeah, you were talking about the tracks they did with Noel Rogers on the Swing. Mm. Yeah, it was the Swing album. But yeah, there's maybe a bit of that in this as well, with the sort of choppy guitars and stuff. And where the only thing I found with the Noel Rogers stuff that they did with him, it's almost a bit generic Noel Rogers, the guitars almost. Whereas this, I feel like it's got a bit more punch to it. And I suppose Kick is that, isn't it? It's got those sort of big sounds.
Yeah, John's drums are huge. Yeah, drums. I heard that the record label were scared of it because they thought that it wouldn't fit in with the modern music.
Yeah.
So they had to send it to College Radio first to test out. Then suddenly they then allowed it to be put onto the mainstream radio. But yeah, they're scared of I guess it's a funk rock in a way, maybe.
Yeah.
I adore the sensation. I described it as the Red Bull or pop. Just gives you an instant hit when it comes on, because he's straight in, isn't he, with it? And it's got the crunching drums. I love. It's even stronger live. Is it just the whole song? Is it just three chords? Is it? It's just simple, works. I'm not a big fan of sax, and that can be a hindrance in the world of it in excess. I think Michael Hudson says trumpet on it as a piss take, because apparently Tim Farris wanted to play a trumpet solo. But then Kurt said, no, I'm the sax player. So take the piss. That's why he said trumpet in the song. And we always wanted to know that. But the video's interesting. It's got that weird animation thing happening. It's a solid track. I wish this was played more than, the other hit we're going to talk about next. But this seems to be there seems to be two songs in this album you constantly hear. And this seems to be pushed aside a little bit alongside Mystify, which I think is brilliant. But Babs?
Yeah, so this isn't one of my NXS favorites. Basically, right, I will say now, I don't dislike any songs on this playlist, but there's ones I like more and ones I like less. I think the drums are quite repetitive and boring, actually. I don't like them. So I wonder if live it does sound a bit different. I also hadn't really thought about the fact that that rhythm guitar at the beginning sounds a lot like U2, which we've done this season. I was like, oh, I've never made that comparison between U2 and NXS. Yeah. But there's another song coming up where I was like, oh, yeah, definitely. But yeah, I think the brass section is really nicely and sparsely used. I love his voice and the effect on it and the vocal oohs and ahs. Yeah, it's very catchy, but it's not, you know, if I had one of five songs to play to you to introduce you to NXS, this wouldn't be one of mine, but it's decent.
Okay, so moving on to, I guess, the most well-known tune, and the Professor Green cover it as well in the past 10 years.
Oh God, I hope not. Sorry, like that's it. Really harsh.
I feel like you did. So Bill, what's your next pick?
It's Need You Tonight. And there's definitely a nod to Prince on this one, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did look up when Sign of the Times came out to see the... but I Want to Be Your Lover as well is another one where he really uses that staccato sort of funky riff. And yeah, you can definitely hear that. And I put Michael Hutchins got lustful delivery that snakes.
Oh yeah,
that snakes over the whole track.
And that was his first take. That was
really well.
No.
Yeah. Mm.
Again, we were talking about Force of Personality, but he definitely sort of stamps it all over this one. There's just a real sort of hunger about it in lots of ways. Mm. Take that how you like. I think it's a great track, really. I mean, you do hear it a lot. You're right, and that's probably the next one as well. You hear them. Hear them a lot, and that probably is the comparison with U2 in a way. At that point, they were just everywhere, weren't they? It's like FM radio just on rotation, you know, a lot of these tracks. And that can be a problem sometimes when you've heard something so many times, you just get sick of it. But I still think it sounds cool. And the only thing you would say maybe slightly dated is that kind of, I don't know if it's like a drum machine or is it like just drums? Yes. Or yeah, you could say that's slightly dated, but I don't know. It's a funny one, dated, again, because it's just down to subjective, isn't it? I got a friend who's like, 80s production is horrible. But actually, some 80s production is fantastic. You know, it just depends. But yeah, it's a pretty cool tune, yeah. And I suppose it shows off a bit more of that like funky side of them, which is part of the NXS sort of cocktail, isn't it? The funk is a big thing of when they really hit their stride, I think, because like the first two or three albums, as we said, it was sort of finding what they're.
Yeah, even his voice is different. I think Babs was quite surprised by his like almost David Bowie delivery.
Yeah.
In those days,
it's kind of like a new wave thing, isn't it? Yeah. And I think a lot of bands went through that. U2 as well, you know, and REM, you know, all like they started off sort of more new wavy, post-punky. And then they sort of found their own.
And I guess when you first start singing, you're going to be copying the songs you like. Definitely. So obviously, he's probably listening to Bowie and Brian Ferry and, you know, Talking Heads. So it makes sense. It takes a while to get your own confidence. So,
for sure.
You know, yeah, I put down Prince. I put down, this sounds like three songs put together. Mm. You've got like a cool synth backing track. Then you've got Prince and you've got that guitar riff on top. It's like three cut and paste sort of thing.
Yeah.
Apparently the backing track, that drum beat was from the original demo. It's one of those things when they got to the studio, spent like a week trying to get some decent like drum machines, then they fucking used the one on his home studio tape. You hear 2 or 3 seconds and you instantly know this is NXS Needed Tonight. This is one of those perfect tricks. But I mean, I probably now skip this because I've heard it far too much.
Yeah,
you know, this made him who stars across the world, and he's even got his pet rat in the video, and that's a guy who's got rats. Thank you very much. Babs, thoughts on Need You Tonight?
Guys, this is one of my top 100 songs of all time.
Of
all time. Like, I agree with you both that it is played a lot, and I've also seen it on music TV a lot, but I will never get sick of this song. It is one of the sexiest songs of all time. Him saying, come over here. It's like, sorry, that sounded horrendous, but it's an early example of kind of ASMR is what I wrote down. Never has a man breathing in sounded so sexy. He goes, And you're like, well, what's your, what? Yeah. So I think I obviously, I heard this very young and it had a big impression. That's definitely a part of it, because I would have heard this I'm pretty certain as a child. But I think, yeah, Bill, you mentioned the kind of the lust and the restraint and the interplay between all the different instruments works amazingly. I love, you know, the harmonizing that comes in and out and the false ending you know, we talked about on other episodes as well. And yeah, what I read was that this was a bit of a throwaway song. Like, Andrew came up with the riff, he wrote some lyrics. It wasn't something that, you know, was really thought about. But no, I adore this song. What the documentary did as well, it's like, I haven't watched it since it came out, but he really doesn't, you know, he feels like your average rock star in the swagger and the voice and everything else, but personality wise he actually seems like quite a sensitive kind person. And especially having, you know, Helena Christensen and Kylie Minogue talking so fondly about him as an ex-boyfriend, you know, that's not every rock star ex-boyfriend, I'm sure.
He doesn't seem like he's sort of bringing his ego on a tour bus or something, you know.
No, and I think his first girlfriend was like a teenage poet or something. That I don't know, he seemed like a really cool dude. It's very sad.
Which is hard to be when you're really famous or been really famous.
Michael Hutchence struggled a lot mentally with the success of Kick, and he wasn't ready to become that big a pop star.
So
I think he is naturally a shy guy. And I think he also said that he had really bad eyesight, and that's how he could perform live, because he literally couldn't see the crowd.
Over-underrated.
Maybe moving on to your next pick, and probably the other biggest single.
Yeah. Never Tear Us Apart. I mean, yeah, it's a really big ballad, isn't it? It's the big strings and I suppose the video really makes it as well.
Yeah.
You can't forget that. It's an excellent vocal as well. Although the production, maybe now I listen back to it, it's almost a little bit sort of middle of the road, maybe. But then it's a ballad, and it's, you know, and I like the way, I like that stop in the middle of it as well, and that big note, you know. I think the video almost makes it in a way. There's an element of like sort of getting to know him a bit more as well than some of the other livelier tracks, if that makes sense. The kind of, like we were saying, the sensitive artist.
Sensitive, gorgeous man.
Yeah.
The ideal type.
Well, he was, and there's a kind of a, yeah, Jim Morrison almost kind of vibe to him in some ways. But less of a, maybe less pretentious.
I think he said that he wanted to make a rock ballad, but without doing the cliches of other rock ballads. And that, which is why he probably doesn't say love in the chorus.
Interesting.
On purpose. Because obviously, it's a synth sample of strings at the start. And maybe that would sound better if it actually had a string quartet. The video version, I like the video version because it's got a longer intro with extra keyboards on top of it. I would prefer to have more keyboards and less guitar. When the band comes in, it doesn't really, for me, give it much extra. If I think it sounds a bit more dated when the guitars and drums comes in. I'd be happy just having the strings behind him. And obviously, there's a sax solo.
I was about to ask
again and again and again.
Like, but it's a big sax solo as well.
Yeah, I think that I'm a fan of this, but I would say that their best ballad or slow song for me is By My Side. But is that because I've not heard it a billion times and not heard loads of people cover it, maybe? I don't know. But Babs, I think you were going to discuss a cover version you like.
Such a nice segue, Fran. Which I shared. So the first time I heard this song, it was not the original INXS version. It was the Tom Jones, Natalie Imbruglia version from Reload. Once again, this album keeps coming up this season. Controversially, I prefer it. I think this is an overrated INXS song. And not just because it's overplayed, because it took me actually blimmin' ages to hear it, but like the two of you, I really don't like the strings, because it's kind of synth strings, and on the Tom Jones version there are real strings and they sound so much better. And Fran, you mentioned Bond, and I've written in the Tom Jones version the strings make it really sound Bond like. I think in the Tom Jones version his voice is a bit much, right, because you have to have a level of restraint. He's singing it all.
How does it work with Natalie? How do they share in the vocal?
They take different sections, and then when it comes to the chorus, they harmonize. And when they harmonize, it works really well. And her voice works quite well, even though obviously it's not as good as Michael Hutchence's. I obviously, the don't know why, that's impressive. But I find that it's a bit fake in pulling at your heartstrings, maybe because of, you know, how kind of, epic his vocals sound, but matched with the very tinny almost strings. So yeah, for me, overrated song.
It was played at a funeral as well, sadly.
Thanks.
They played the Tom Jones one at
the
funeral.
Tom Jones. Oh, that's fine. Natalie Imbruglia was there as well. Okay, good.
So moving on to your next pick, Bill.
Suicide Blonde. I feel like my picks are quite obvious, really. But I love the harmonica on this. It's almost like, I don't know, it's almost like someone's got a big sort of sheet of white paper and just scribbled all over it, almost as like a harmonica. It's the oral equivalent. It's just really addictive, isn't it? Fizzy.
Mm.
The vocals really irresistible. Like you said, there is obviously, it's mirroring a lot of the Kick stuff. It's trying to recreate that.
I would say this is probably the most Kick song on the album.
Yeah, but I like the harmonica. The harmonica adds something fun to it. I don't mind harmonicas, actually. It's, you know.
Yeah, I put that as well. I put, it's rare to hear a harmonica on a hit single back in 1990.
Yeah. And then I started to doubt myself. Is it a harmonica? Yeah, it is.
it's sampled, though. It's not him playing it.
Well, do you know, just to come in, I didn't realize it was a harmonica just because, you know, it's the da-da-da. I wrote, is this a synth kazoo?
My favorite instrument.
That's what it, because, you know, it is so kind of
back
and forth. I was like, that doesn't sound zigzaggy. Natural, but quite frighteningly, I didn't think it was a harmonica. So I think I need to go back and do some music.
There's a harmonica solo in the middle as well.
Yeah, I literally wrote synth kazoo ?
It seems to be more about a character, doesn't it, rather than himself or anything.
Well, I think he wrote it about Kylie.
Okay, I didn't know that. There we go. Now, that makes sense, because they were, you know, they were a couple at the time, weren't they? That does make sense.
Yeah, but I think it was literally inspired by a conversation they had where she said, I'm going to dye my hair blonde. And it was something like, I'm going to dye it by my own hand, you know, dye, D-Y-E, something like that. Fran, maybe you know better. But
Yep, and there's the pun of the Suicide Blonde.
Oh, I like it more now. That's a good story. I like Kylie, you know.
I remember this more than, as a kid, I remember this more than like Never Tears Us Apart, because the video was constantly on repeat.
Yeah.
And me and my friends would mock it, would do our own mock-up of the video. And there's people like sassying up to the camera and turning. You can't see, but unfortunately, because it's a podcast.
What a shame. I loved your sassy show.
I can reenact it for you, but basically, it's just like models in the band walking up to the camera and like turning their heads and walking away again constantly. But I would say this is the perfect song to follow Kick with, because it is kind of Kick-ish and that sort of like funky guitar thing again. And then maybe the rest of Kick after a while went in a different direction. But yeah, I said, you know, it's rare to have a harmonica of a hit single in 1990. I love the layers of guitar. It's catchy as fuck chorus. And also, this is the last song that he ever performed.
Yeah. So synth kazoo aside, my notes are that I hadn't realised how much this sounded like U2. I mean, this almost sounds like the guitar sound from Desire or something like that. Although harmonica / synth kazoo and country guitars are not my usual bag, it works here. I don't know why, maybe because of the catchiness of the rhythm guitar hooks and the accompanying bass. I think also it's really a proper showcase of Michael Hutchence's vocals, because he switches between like speak singing but then falsetto but then screaming. I mean, and even there's a really nice echo effect on his voice in parts. And I wrote that the brass is subtle once again for me. Yeah, the normally when In Excess use brass, they use it well. So yeah, I think this is definitely a good In Excess song.
So Bill, what's your next pick?
Beautiful Girl.
Mm-hmm.
From the album you were talking about before, it's their At Chung Baby, yeah?
Yes.
I suppose this is my least favourite, actually. I do actually like how restrained it is compared to the others, in terms of it's not as got as much bombast, although I do like the bombast at times. I like the sort of twinkling percussion as well. And it's funny because you said the last one could sound like U2 track. I think this one could as well, in a way. Maybe more of a B-side or something, like The Sweetest Thing or something like that. But yeah, maybe a little bit saccharine, but kind of tender as well. So yeah, it depends which side you fall on, really. But I quite like it because it's quite different for them, different to the others as well.
I think it's definitely, for me, it was a grower.
Yeah.
I mean, when you hear the best of, like, you know, there's so many catchy songs on it, it's just hard to jump out. So I think, you know, it took me a while to get into it. But yeah, I guess it's more Velvet Underground for me, maybe, sort of sound.
Yeah.
It's almost, Yeah, this is solely written by Andrew about his new baby girl. But I kind of like the stripped back arpeggios and piano and acoustic guitars. It sort of all blends along nicely. And then it gently builds up the keyboards and the saxophone at the end. So yeah, this is my favourite album by INXS because it's one of those albums where every single song sounds completely different, which is why you've got this on the album, because you've got like a bombastic song, Baby Don't Cry, with like a 60-piece orchestra, and then you've got this stripped back, you know, beautiful 60s sort of thing going on, and you've got like songs like Taste It. So that's what I kind of like an album that takes you on a journey. So Babs, Beautiful Girl.
So for me, this does fall on the overrated, because I think it possibly was on a greatest hits, or yeah. I definitely came to it very early. I don't hate it. I think Michael Hutchence sounding sultry and sexy as ever. Again, harmony. I love the harmonies. I think the brass is used well. I like the piano line that comes through, but not the keyboards that are backing it. So I could do away with those, but it is corny. I agree with you there, Bill. And yeah,
it's about his daughter.
I know, but this is the thing. I was going to say, I was like, yeah, this is a little bit cool. And then when I read that he said, oh, I was writing lyrics like Baby Don't Cry and Beautiful Girl, just about how wonderful it is to have something else in your life besides yourselves to worry about and think about. And I was like, that is annoyingly quite sweet. And now I can't. But yeah, Bill, Fran is a self-described sap and I have a colder heart in general when it comes to music. I think if another band, if many other bands had done this, I think I would really dislike it. But there is a restraint and a subtlety in there that I admire for sure.
Yeah, it's not cheesy, is it? But it's, yeah, it could be a little bit saccharine. But, you know, depends what you read it was about. You know, I didn't even know the meaning behind it, so.
Yeah, I didn't know also until today it was about his daughter. I always thought, like, yeah, this is a bit cheesy, but then I was like, it's, and the way he talked about it as well, of like, something else in your life to, you know, look after. Yeah. Like, oh, that's, I love men getting emotional, so, yeah.
And I guess, you know, he's probably a bit bored of Michael just writing something about shagging, so he would have something a bit different, maybe.
Fran with the shagging and death updates.
Have you heard the album? Are you a fan of Taste It, Babs? That's on the album.
I am a fan of Taste It, but I'm not a fan of Baby Don't Cry.
Yeah, I know, that's a bit over the top. But I guess if you've got the money, then you might as well try recording with a big band.
Listen, I would want to go full out ELP or, you know, Michael INXS with a 60-piece orchestra one day for sure.
It definitely is like the album. Like, it's got a song with like a sitar in it. It's got, you know, it literally is the band going, right, we've got a lot of money. Let's just see what we can do in the studio.
That's it. When you said Baby Don't Cry was on it, I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't listen to it. But then you said Taste It, and I was like, that is completely different. So, yeah.
I love Taste It, and I love Heaven Sent. So we asked a question then. So, Bill, after you've been checking out INXS, would you declare them as overrated?
They're the best. They're not overrated. But, and especially live. I think live band, they were sort of magnetic, weren't they? And I'd say maybe like... Maybe later on, maybe a little bit overrated, personally, in my opinion. But at their peak, not overrated.
They had it going on
in
the late 80s.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they sold 17 million albums. That's quite
exactly,
a bad.
Yeah.
I guess they were one of the biggest bands in the world around 1988. But yeah, so for me, I would say not overrated, because I think in the UK, they are kind of like boiled down to like two or three songs.
Mm.
And like I said, barely anyone knows they even existed before Kick.
Yeah.
This is kind of, for me, a bit sad. And like,
you could argue they're underrated in a way, couldn't you, I suppose?
If you wanted to. Up against you two.
That's the joy of this podcast.
The joy of the podcast. So, for me, I would say they're not overrated because I think there's a lot more to offer. I think that there's some bands that, you know, you only need to know like those five songs. I think INXS, I think their band, they've got, you know, three or four really good albums.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mike Hudson was one of the best frontmen of all time. They wrote some great songs.
I suppose it's the sort of like criticism some people might make, and like who are more into sort of the indie world, they might say, well, they're just like really over the top and, you know, sort of, I don't know, like sort of that big sort of radio going obviously for that big hit all the time. But they're, you know, when they're commercial peak. But I haven't got a problem with that. I suppose my only problem is sometimes with sort of bluesy rock bands, like Rolling Stones, more of an example, sort of like when it's the same chord they're hammering away on, or it feels like. But I feel like maybe INXS sort of like developed their own thing where they were stretching out sort of elements of funk and his personality, Michael Hutchence, and the rest of them.
So for me, Yeah, I think that more people need to check out and assess. But Babs, where do you sit?
As ever, I always begin with the Spotify monthly listeners. Did you look, or
I looked for go-betweens because I can't find out how many albums are sold.
Not many.
But yeah, so guess how many monthly listeners in excess have, just for fun.
2 million.
2 million from Bill. Fran, higher, lower?
Randomly, I know that Bombay Basketball Club have 2 million, so I'm surely in excess of bigger than them. So I'm gonna say 10 million.
Because... Oh, Fran, you hit it! You hit it on the head. Ding, 10 ding. Million, amazing. Yeah, that surprised me. I would have guessed maybe between 2 and 4 million, like you, Bill. And normally, my attitude to that is, well, you know, because I didn't like every song on the playlist, but I don't hate any song on the playlist. And I think any band that makes one of my top 100 songs of all time could never be overrated. So for INXS, absolutely not overrated, especially because how could I call them overrated when I barely know their back catalogue? And Fran sent me one of their songs in advance that I didn't warm to immediately, but it was definitely like, oh, this is a completely different sound that might take some time to warm up to, and I'm very intrigued. So yeah, RIP Michael
Hutchins.
That's
the end of part one.
Do you listen to albums start to finish? Do you love concept albums? Are you always the first one at a party to bring up King Gizzard? Say no more. The Album Concept Hour podcast has everything you need. We have hot takes.
It's like Voltron.
It's just like Voltron. It's like Voltron with jazz. This is emo. This is Willie Nelson's emo trip. Bad improv attempts.
That was
Let's all
British.
Do our best Aussie accent.
Let's not.
Let's alienate all the Australians.
And sometimes we even learn something. As they listened again and again to the song in the control room, Axel started saying, "Where do we go? Where do we go now? Where do we go?"
Shut
up. Spencer turned down the music and said, "Why don't you just try singing that?" And thus the last part of the song was born. Listen to the Album Concept Hour wherever you listen to podcasts.
Underrated.
Okay, so the go-between. So can you guide us through this bit with your knowledge?
I'll try my best. It's funny because, like, I probably didn't know of the go-betweens until about, like, probably the early 2000s, really, because they did come back. But then I kind of delved into their... Especially in the last 10 years, I've delved into their back catalogue a lot. And I suppose for the uninitiated, they're sort of Robert Foster and Grant McLellan, who were a pair of teenagers who met in Brisbane. And they were influenced by the likes of Dylan, Velvet Underground, Talking Heads, stuff like that. And their earlier stuff is much more... And in a way, I kind of wish I'd put maybe a slightly more punkier... track on here, but I suppose I just couldn't leave off certain ones. But they kind of were influenced by the British Invasion, New Wave. After a period of like trying to find a drummer, they found a lady called Lindy Morrison, and the band's classic lineup was settled. And then they moved to England and recorded their debut LP. Again, heavily influenced by post-punk, new wave. It's called Send Me a Lullaby, and they were signed to Rough Trade very briefly. Mm-hmm. And McKellen's relationship with multi-instrumentalist Amanda Brown, who joined the band later on, and Foster's relationship with Lindy meant that often they were described as the indie Fleetwood Mac, because there was often, you know, that kind of push and pull between those two relationships. And I suppose there's a bit of sort of an almost the Beatles kind of comparison as well, because they were quite different songwriters. Robert Foster, or Forster, is more of an angular, sort of wordy, lanky. Mm-hmm. His lyrics are sort of more impenetrable and arty, whereas Grant McKellen is sort of the more warm, melodic, heartfelt, maybe Paul McCartney type, really. But I suppose their first albums maybe sounded like two different songwriters, you know, their first few albums sort of shut together, really. But as they reached around the time they reached Spring Hill Fair and released one of the tracks that we're going to play, Bachelor Kisses, they sort of stumbled on a formula, really. And then the next run of releases was excellent, including Tallulah, which it kind of really, really sort of hits that big sound that's almost comparable to somebody like Echo and the Bunnymen with the orchestral stings. Yeah, it's got the post-punk new wave sound as well, but also the pop, leaning into the pop, and they were kind of going in that direction when they finally sort of reached their pinnacle on 16 Lovers Lane, which is their classic album, really. And I'm trying to find a copy of it, and this is how cult of a band they are. It's like, you know, it's 50 quid for a copy, you know, because there's not many copies around, and they've never reissued it. So, but it is one of those albums that's kind of become a cult classic in years. As the years have gone on, you know, they never had a top 40 hit. They got back together in the 2000s, did like sort of three albums of really, you know, sort of maybe more straightforward sort of alternative rock, you know, just the two of them with new members. Mm-hmm. And they released, probably the standout was Oceans Apart, which has an excellent single called Finding You, which is probably their last great song, I'd say. But yeah, I just think they fit this moniker so well, you know, of underrated band, because they never had a top 40 hit, and they had amazing songs, you know. And maybe, and they wrote a bit about why they were never, you know, sort of big. They never made it big as they should have done. McKellen said, "We had this interesting thing going on in terms of being a rock band or a pop band and having a different background, you know, an art background. We like bands like the Monkees, we like Dylan, we like Television and Talking Heads, people that normally weren't in rock and roll, but being in rock and roll at the same time and seeing where that would go." So I like that kind of idea that, you know, and also they didn't really have like a sort of strong image either, because they were quite different. And also, as you could probably hear from like some of the songs, it's like it almost sounds like a different band at times, because the difference between McKellen and Robert Forster as frontman and vocalist is just like, you know, yeah, Lennon McCartney almost, you know, almost like having David Byrne in the band and McCartney in the band, you know, almost. So it's the one album where they did make it seamless almost is 16 Lovers Lane, which is like a love letter to pop almost, and a love letter to, you know, failed relationships and you know, successful ones as well. But yeah, I've been sort of, yeah, gorging on the Go-Betweens. And in a way, I've kind of like, in a way, I suppose you would kind of compare them to bands like REM in the 80s, mm-hmm. you know, or the Smiths, because they moved over here and they were trying to become successful or trying to get a wider audience, you know, like all indie bands as they were trying to get a wider audience. But for me, like an album like Tallulah or 16 Lovers Lane is as good as any of those, any of those bands really in that period, you know. So that's why I thought they were ideal for this, because they're one of those bands you can sort of go in and sort of, like you were saying about NXS, you can go in and explore and find this like treasure trove of like songwriting in different styles as well, in quite different styles. Probably not, I wish I'd, in a way, maybe it didn't. It's hard to, in five tracks, it's hard to show off all the different sides of a band, but I'll try my best.
And thank you for trying your best. So I watched a documentary on 16 Lovers Lane, and they're speaking about each album was split down the middle, like Forster and half McKellen. So for yourself, do you switch on whose songs you prefer?
I'm more of a Grant McKellen, because I am just, and that's probably why my tracks edge more towards him. But I did include one, two Layers of Lightning, which is more of a Robert Forster kind of arty kind of, you know, fractured track that I thought maybe gives more of an idea of, and it's an album track, and it gave me more of an idea of that side of the band than just the pure pop kind of big anthems kind of. But then they did start off as I listened to some of the earlier stuff. And some of the albums aren't, you know, a bit like NXS in a way. Like, there's a couple of, like, standout tracks. But, like, I mean, the earliest one I've got here is Cattle and Cain. And that, I just couldn't leave that off because it is so atmospheric. We'll get into it in a minute. But, yeah, it just, it's got that kind of new wavy time signature thing going on.
I hear that.
Yeah, I tend to lean more towards like melody myself. I'm probably more of a melody, although I do like some.
I apologize already in advance.
I do like some things that are a bit more, you know, obtuse. It depends what hits me on the day, you know.
Robert Forster's kind of an interesting figure, don't he? I quite like him.
He is.
I've seen him talk. He also like dressed up in like women's clothing from like the mid 80s and all sorts of things, and it's quite. Yeah. No, I thought it's quite cool. Yeah, he says, "Oh yeah, we're not made for the top 40," but I don't know. I think you guys are quite interesting.
Yeah.
He seems quite down on himself the music's kind of like very up and, you know, sunshiny, well, once I'd heard.
Yeah.
But he seems quite dour on the music. But he kept saying, you know, people think that looking back that we had like hit singles. Believe me, we had no fucking hits.
No. They didn't sell many records, which it's just so surprising to me every time I listen to one of their albums in a way. Like the first two or three, I can get it because like they're probably like two or three. There's like one or two standout tracks in each one, you know. And the rest of it is not quite at that level. But then once you get into that run of Tallulah, 16 Lovers Lane, Liberty Bell, and the Black Diamond, once you get into all of those, they're just cracking albums.
Mm-hmm. I think people definitely like say that, oh, they're a band for people who live in Australia because they feel Australian when listening to their music.
Yeah.
I saw that in YouTube comments as well. Yeah.
Maybe it's harder for us as Brits and Portuguese, maybe.
I think they've got a very English sensibility as well, though, in a way. Like, a lot of the things they're influenced by, they were English. So that's why they moved over here, I think. But yeah, I suppose with, go into it, but like The Streets of Your Town, that is considered one of the best Australian songs ever.
I knew one song, and that's because Nada Surf covered it, and that's Love Goes On, because Nada Surf had that on their covers album, but I literally didn't know anything else.
That's so, a good song as well. That could definitely be on this, yeah, for sure.
That's on 16 Lovers Lane, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, so this was like an introduction basically to the Go-Betweens, and that's why I wanted to see their film because, like, you know, I love discovering bands, watching a film.
Yeah.
Babs, did you know anything about the Go-Betweens before this? Or?
So I thought I did. And then I was like, oh, I know absolutely nothing about this band. For some reason, I got conflated with the Runaways. I don't know why. That's where I went to. And I was even looking. I was like, do they have a song with Go in the title? But yeah, I have read the book that they're named after, The Go-Between, which starts with that very nice, famous line, the past is a foreign country. They do things differently there. And because also, I didn't really know what the theme was when it was proposed. I was like, I presume it's Australia. I was like, I have absolutely no idea what on earth this is going to sound like. So yeah, I went into this completely blind, not knowing what I was going to listen to.
So with that in mind, Bill, introduce us to your first track.
This is Catlin Kane. Yeah, I suppose it's like the signature, even though they like they released a few singles off the first album that were more like ramshackle sort of post-punky, as I mentioned. I was going to pick one, but then I just thought I can't leave this off. It's just, there's something so atmospheric about it, and sort of it captures that time and place. It's an autobiographical reminiscence by Grant McLennan, who wrote the song with Robert Forster on a train trip home to North Queensland as a schoolboy. The song was written and recorded by a homesick McLennan in London, and it's just like a wistfulness to it. There's a real sort of, and then it's got that like time signature, which is really unusual, I think. That's married up with the new wave sensibility, and yet the vocals are almost like you can't get a handle on them, almost. They're kind of like almost like a wisp, but there's kind of this, I love the way it captures that landscape of Australia and the detail. That's something about Go-Betweens, they use some unusual imagery that you just wouldn't think of, you know. They're talking about cattle, cane, tin, timber, you know, fire. It captures that homesickness, I suppose, and it's that idea of being away from home.
I mean, it's not the greatest title, is it, really? If you see Cattle and Kane, you don't really think, oh, yeah, I need to check out that one. But for me, yeah, first time I heard it, and I instantly thought of, like, that Scottish indie sound from the 80s. I'm a fan of that sort of movement, a bit C86.
They
as well,
were influenced obviously on Belle and Sebastian, which you could probably tell.
Yes. I put that one. Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of weird. It's a bit gloomy, but it's also delicate at the same time.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Definitely.
And I've then thought it sort of glides along with no real chorus. No. I mean, they repeat the same phrases, but it's not a real instant chorus. But it really works. And like, reading the comments, people saying, oh yeah, this makes you think of Australia instantly. And I was trying to think, what song makes me think of England? And I thought, World in Motion by New Order.
Vindaloo,
exactly. Is that a song? Park Life? I mean, that sounds pretty lame, doesn't it? I mean,
Park Life, Common People. Or, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, but yeah, that's about, yeah, that's slagging off.
I know
which people. I don't know, but yeah, I couldn't do that. But I thought the solo stands out, and they do a lot of that, but the solo doesn't really suit the song.
Yeah.
It's almost like a new order solo when it comes in. So I thought it was really interesting after that sort of delicate acoustic guitar. Suddenly it's like, you know, burn the sun. The guitar.
Yeah, there is something slightly jarring about it, but yeah, it somehow works. I suppose that's like what you would say about most indie songs, wouldn't you, I guess?
Yeah, and it is, to me, so indie because he doesn't have that perfect singing voice. No. It does feel a little bit homemade, a little bit, you know, like hobby. But so yeah, I guess these days indie can be as shiny as anything, can't it? But back in those days, indie did mean, you know, slightly punk, slightly homemade, slightly do it yourself. And I kind of like his non-perfect vocal, if that makes sense. It's a bit like Jeffrey Lewis. I don't know if you know Jeffrey Lewis. Yeah. It's got that sort of twang to it, to his vocals. It's a kind of like,
and then there's like this sort of spoken word bit at the end.
Mm.
That's Forster.
But do they collaborate a lot on? Because like,
all
I
of it's collaboration,
that,
really. I think.
Because I read that like McKellen did like the poppy songs, and then Forster left to do like the art rock songs.
Well, no, I think a lot of it's collaboration. Together. You know.
Okay.
But yeah, there's definitely a divide. Obviously, like I was reading some of it and Robert Forster was saying, oh, you know, I didn't even know that he'd come up with Streets of Your Town, you know.
So, Babs, what are your thoughts on Catherine Kane?
So, yeah, I was trying to find, I was like, who does this remind me of? And you guys talking about Scottish Indian C86, I was like, ah, yes, music that I don't know very much about, because I was really, I was like, it sounds like The Chameleons, but less synthy. And I recommend Down the Up Escalator, by the way, as a place to start with The Chameleons. So yeah, I was like, is this The Chameleons, but less synthy? I also compared it to two French bands. Ooh. For me, Louise Attack, or the acoustic guitar sound, it reminded me of, and they're very inspired by Violent Femmes as well. And then even towards the end, it reminded me a bit of Andoshin, you know, not the piano Andoshin, but more the guitar Andoshin. But I wrote, like you, the New Order, the bass at the end is pure hooky. And yeah, so on the song itself, I was like, well, this is quite an intriguing beginning. The guitar and bass are kind of hesitating with each other. I was like, this is both post-punk and new wave, which is interesting. And like you, Bill, I love the time signature and the rhythm it creates, like swaying. It kind of doesn't surprise me that he wrote it on a train. Mm. Yeah, it has that vibe. And I really like Grant's gentle voice.
Mm.
And you know, you mentioned that it's a band that needs repeated listens, and I totally agree, and wonder if that's why they are not as big as they are, because
probably
none of the songs on this playlist immediately call to me at all, including this one. I was like, okay, I can admire all these things, but I'm not loving the song. And it was only on the second listen I was like, oh, I'm appreciating this a little bit more. And I wanted to as we do sometimes, call out a YouTube comment which said, this song has become even more poignant for me as I get older, with my dad suffering dementia in his old age. Time waits for no one, innocence lost, then fake memories come back, but never quite sure whether they are real. Poetry in the YouTube comment section again. So yeah, I was like, okay, this is clearly a band with lots of influences. And I then read when I went to look them up that they kind of had that as a purpose from the beginning. Yeah. I think that they said, like, well, I'll quote it because they said it better than I do, NPR. The Go-Betweens made music that hit people's pop pleasure receptors in an almost sneaky, definitely brainy sort of way. This approach grew organically out of the art school pals' early post-punk leaning years, as well as the love of big sticky hooks.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, they're trying to do a bit of both here.
Yeah. They're probably not like pop enough to be like FM radio.
It's very subtle.
I suppose the point is they probably deserve to sell a few more records. That's all it was. Yes, that's why I say they're
the fact that they haven't reissued an album. Yeah. That's crazy when clearly the demand is there.
Definitely
that,
is. Yeah.
Over underrated.
So should we move on to your next pick, then, Bill?
Yeah. Bachelor Kisses. It's so ripe with sort of longing and sort of delectable arrangements. And there's a sort of backing vocal on there from Anna De Silva, who's from the Raincoats. I love that sort of sighing backing vocals.
Okay.
Yeah, also Tracy Thorn was also one of their backing vocalists at one point as well, apparently. But yeah, there's a sort of push and pull to it, and there's a sort of world weariness. It's about promises being broken and how men sort of let down women, basically. I didn't realize that until I read more into the song. I actually picked it for a podcast we did on 1984 as an underrated song. And I just thought it was like a romantic song. And then when more I read about it, I love the sort of line, "Don't believe what you've heard. Faithful's not a bad word," you know? I love that. And he said, it's not a courtly song. This is McClellan now talking. I see a lot of infidelity around me. Most people involved in music are guilty in many cases. I see a lot of trust and promises being broken. I'm guilty of it myself. It's all about promises the world of men have made to women as far as the future of their life goes, security, the raising of children. And I just found it wanting, really. It's not a unique thought. I suppose it does kind of, you know, hint at what they would go on to do, or he would go on to do specifically, I guess. And that is the side of the band that I do, that chimes with me as much more, in a way, I would say.
So, yeah, I read that they thought this was going to be their big pop single. Yeah. And then obviously it got nowhere. Mm. I mean, yeah, I put, you know, it's a bit about infidelity. I put, it's almost sleepy and beautiful. It's not for the perfect minded. It's like the chorus again is also a little bit too subtle again. The song is sort of like breeze along, but yeah, but maybe you know, if you're trying to have a hit, people maybe want that. I don't know, did they ever do like some killer choruses? Because obviously on this, most of the songs are very melodic, but not like there's no Stock Aitken and Waterman.
No, of course not. Yeah, and you have to remember in this period, I suppose being an indie band was quite a, like, you know, you wore it on your sleeve, didn't you? There were a lot of synth pop bands around in this period. You know, this was sort of prime 1984, 1985, 1986, you know.
They mentioned that. They said, no, we refuse to have any drum machines or synths.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess looking back, that wasn't the best thing to do. Maybe they sort of experimented.
Yeah, maybe they were just happy with being that, though. I suppose there's a lot of, in a way, there's a lot of bands who are just happy being bands, in a way. You know, obviously, they would have liked, I mean, obviously, moving to London and signing to certain these record labels, they would have liked to have sold more records. Of course they would. But I don't think they were like, you know, I suppose, in a way, the fact that they didn't have hits was the reason they split up, in a way.
Yeah, it's weird, though. Didn't it break up after the biggest album?
Yeah.
I
think it was to do with some of the relationships kind of falling apart as well. Okay. And there's more to that as well, I think.
The John Peel version, I think, is better than the album version. I don't know if you've heard it. It's on YouTube. But yeah, it's a lot clearer, and it's vocally and the guitars sound far better on the Peel version. But yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Lloyd Cole and the Commotions. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Lloyd Cole and the Commotions. So yeah, I thought this is a decent track, and I've probably listened to it maybe six times today. Babs, Bachelor's Kiss.
Well, let's first shout out to Ana da Silva, because she's of Portuguese origin. She's not even of Portuguese origin, she's Portuguese.
Oh, yeah.
And so there are very few, you know, apart, there's Saffron from Republica and JK, and the other from Jamiroquai, the other two of Portuguese origin people in the British rock world. So shout out to her. So I'll tell you what I did like. I love his soft voice when it comes in. I quite like the lightning effects after about the middle, and I don't get, even though it's repetitive, I don't get sick of the won't you save every time. I'm like, it tides me over again. I think it's the time signature thing that was also in Catlin Kane. But when it started, I was like, is this Lady in Red by Chris de Burgh? That's the vibe that it gave. So immediately I was like,
if only.
Then, you know, I think probably after this song, I read that NPR quote and I was like, yeah, I think I like their post-punk edges more than their pop edges.
Fair
and apart from the you know, the time signature changes and stuff like that, I didn't really get that from this song. So yeah, I wasn't such a fan of this one.
Oh, I get it. It's very romantic, you know.
Cold Dead Hearts. Yes.
It's funny, though, because it's kind of a, like you said, that you think it's really romantic, but actually it's kind of a warning in a way.
It's like that meme that keeps coming up, and I think we've mentioned it on the podcast, where it's like the tune, the lyrics, and it'll be like, you know, the house that's really brightly colored and then the black house. There's, you know, there's a lot of bands that's their whole vibe. Mm-hmm, you know, they'll write the most horrendous rendering lyrics, but it's very jingly jangly on the top.
Yeah, so, that, yeah. There's a street, Streets of Your Town as well. Like, talks about domestic violence. Just drop that in there, you know. Just drop a bit of domestic violence into this jaunty sort of, you know, jangly song.
So what's your next pick, Bill?
It's called Bye Bye Pride, and it's from their album Tallulah, I believe. It's just really sort of joyously big and sort of cinematic almost. And yeah, it just boasts the really big melody again. And it's sort of soaring and sort of, and there's a really great oboe on it as well from Amanda Brown, who was McLellan's partner at the time. It's just really, I suppose I read somewhere that it's like as close to epic as they ever got, like, you know. And Forster put, it's Grant's majestic Bye Bye Pride was one of the best opening lives ever. And it's like a 10-foot wave driven by Lindy snare and Amanda's piping oboe on the top. Yeah, there's something jaunty about it. Yeah, it's kind of like about failed romance again. You know, it's kind of that duality of, you know, a lot of indie pops like that. You know, it's kind of that duality of a really happy, you know, song or sound tune with a sort of a darker, but I suppose I was struggling to narrow it down to five. So I was just like, what really grabs me? And this one grabbed me. So I was just like the way it sort of bursts forth in a way. Like, it's almost like it comes out of the door and it's just like straight into it, you know. Steve Kilby from The Church said he selected this as one of his best Australian songs. He said, this song is full of longing and regret and naive lyrics. The lyrics are so Brisbane. I can almost see it all happening right in front of me. I could never grow sick of this song, he said. So, you know.
And we should mention that Brisbane have now named a bridge after the band.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to mention that, actually.
So they had no hits, but they got a bridge. So, no.
McLellan died in 2006 of a heart attack, which is really sad, you know, because they got back together in 2000, did a few albums, and then, yeah, 2010, they had a toll bridge, and then Native Brisbane renamed the Go Between Bridge after them. Yeah, so.
I mean, that's a nice title for a bridge as well, yeah.
Yeah, Bye Bye Pride. I thought this was going to be like an angry song, or like it's just like Bye Bye Pride. Yeah. Again, it's another lovely, it's a beautiful narrative story. He loves to sing about his environment. I do enjoy Amanda's presence. I enjoy her in the band. I enjoy really like the oboe and her and the backing vocals she provides for the band. And I was going to say that this reminds me a lot of the Dream Academy. It's not many people know Dream Academy apart from Life in the Northern Town, but they had a lot of like acoustic tracks of like an oboe player and a flute player, and I thought, oh, this is very much the same sort of vibe. So yeah, this was my third favorite track, but again, I think maybe it is missing that spark, which is why it probably didn't become a hit single. But it is weird why this isn't played at all, because I mean this to me could easily be played on, you know, on radio. Yeah. I don't see it's
you
not,
never
it's
hear
not
the
clear, challenging.
So I suppose that's why I picked them in a way. You never hear them.
Although I reading some YouTube comments, people were saying they are played on Sixth Music these days. If you say,
yeah,
oh,
again,
I heard it on Sixth Music, so I guess at least they're getting some play. Babs.
So this was my least favorite song on the playlist. I was like, wow, I disagree with almost everything. I am an oboe fan, okay. but not in this song. I don't like the harmonies, and the end of the door is always wide open. Sorry, the door is always open wide really irritated me. I was like, oh, it's too merry, it's too happy. And it's one of those where as soon as it started, I was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to like this. And sometimes I can be wrong, right? Sometimes I was like, come on, Barbara, open your mind. The one thing that I did write that was maybe positive is this seems to me like a forerunner for a certain type of Britpop acoustic guitar. I was like, oh, I've heard this in so many kind of mid to late 90s British bands. So I was wondering, you know, who did they influence?
Belle and Sebastian is a big one, I guess, yeah.
I was thinking maybe the Charlatans or something like that. I don't know. Like,
yeah, Posh Players.
Yeah.
I've never heard them associate with Britpop, but, you know, yeah.
So, but that's my least favourite, so at least we've got that over and done.
I probably wouldn't have liked this kind of thing, like, 20 years ago, you know.
Okay,
interesting. It's funny.
Have you mellowed, Bill?
Possibly. I always loved melody, but I also like noise as well when I was younger. Mm. So I suppose my tastes have like And I suppose I've been looking for like a replacement for the Smiths. So
yeah, I wonder
these
why.
Guys and the Railway Children, another underrated band that yeah.
I don't think I've ever even heard of the Railway Children. Mm. But now that we've mentioned it, it's going on the playlist for the podcast. So there we go.
So Bill, what's your next pick, please?
This is Twin Layers of Lightning. Yeah, I suppose I picked this because it's just such a more of a Robert Forster kind of piece of songwriting, really. It wasn't a single, it's just an album track that people pick out, and it just there's something really fractured about it and kind of like subtle and like it's very different, obviously, to everything else on the playlist. And yeah, just like that. I love the way the sort of guitar sort of balance and the kind of sort of an elegance to it that's kind of broken open, and but it's got these kind of wry foreboding vocals that are kind of almost Lou Reed Dylan-y, sort of dripping in irony. And I love that line about Bouncer's got no brain, said both of you are barred. I had to tell him, listen straight, listen Jack, don't you know I'm a star, like that, which is really ironic considering, you know, they weren't really big act, you know. Well, I assume he's talking about himself anyway, but yeah, the sort of delivery is quite detached as well, and it's just very different. Obviously, I just wanted to show something totally different to everything else I picked, really. But yeah, like, you'd almost listen to this and think, this is a different band, really, you know.
I mean, this is the song that I struggled more with, to be fair. Although I do like, I really like, is it called, is it Head for the Steam?
Yeah, that's a good one as well.
Yeah, that's my favourite track I saw.
I suppose I wanted to pick one off each sort of album kind of thing as well, so yeah.
Someone put on YouTube, this is a grower, it gets better over time. 33 years later, it's now my favourite song. I thought, I'm sorry, Jules Brown, but I don't have that long to listen to that thing.
It is very, it's probably not even my like usual kind of thing, but I suppose I thought, this is so different to everything else. So, you know, it's going on.
It's got like it's got a melodic guitar line, but I can't actually whistle it. Does that make sense?
Totally...
It's kind of like jangly, but it's not really.
It's like little fragments, isn't it?
Mm, yeah. Mm. So, yeah, it's definitely interesting. I said it left me with an air of mystery. I enjoyed Robert. The lyrics were interesting. I guess he's taking a piss, but, you know, obviously they weren't stars at all.
No,
and
I just like that irony.
Is it about him or is it just about...
I don't know. Yeah, I think it's about him. It just sounds like him. But I saw it cited as, like, you know, by people who know the Go-Betweens even more than me, like as one of the sort of like their lesser known sort of gems. Like,
no, that's good to have a rainbow of different sounds. That means. Yeah. But yeah, they put on that. They thought this album was going to be the big hit. And again, they reckon they shot themselves in the foot by refusing Drum Machines and Synths because they think they had loads of like pop songs that could have...
It's funny because I listened to that album. I don't think that at all. So.
Really?
I don't hear many like huge hits in comparison to some of the others.
Babs?
Well, yeah. I mean, Bill, you were saying you wanted to provide you know, different kinds of sounds, and this is a sound that I preferred. Yeah. I thought the beginning was really captivating and I love the bass line. Yeah. But what I thought was interesting is... So I really liked this song when it was minimal, right?
Yeah.
And so far, I really like... I really liked Glenn's voice, but here when the voice, piano and guitar come in, I'm like, it's too much, it's way too much. I feel like it's just thrown in randomly and thrown out, and I gave it like a good guy. I listened to this 3 or 4 times, but every time that came in, I was like, ah no, that's what I felt with this song. But I love that angular sound.
This is Robert Forster, you see, and I suppose that's why one of the reasons they never broke through is that it's like, you know, you've got two people who are sort of like, so you've almost got like two different bands, you know, because people want to like, especially in the 80s, probably, you know, definitely, they like grab onto that one front man, don't they? It's like, oh, this is the front man, you know.
Absolutely. Visually, they're so different. Like,
so different.
Robert's like a Gandhi guy who wears like, sometimes wears lipstick and has like weird white hair and all sorts of things. And then Grant looks like the most average person of all time. Do you know what I mean?
It's just
that's
the dude.
Like AC/DC, is it?
So I guess it would be confusing if you saw one video and saw another video for what the fuck? Is that the same band?
Yeah, I think I watched the Cattle and Cane video, but I have to say, yeah, I was kind of rushing a bit to finish the preparation and it didn't really grab me. So I was like, oh, I just don't think I'm going to bother. Like, I don't think, you know, you mentioned how the NXS video made the song. Absolutely. But the the 1.5 that I saw for Go Betweens, I was like, yeah, I don't think it's adding anything.
No, they weren't really a video band. No, not at all.
But I wonder if they had been, would they have had more success? Maybe.
Possibly.
Because they are a storytelling band, right? And there are stories that you can... So I feel like it is a bit of a wasted opportunity because, you know, I maybe didn't save Cattle and Cain, but I can't deny that it paints a whole picture. And the fact, especially, like, it's in three sections telling the three eras of life. I think that there's more that could have been done there.
But I think a lot of Australians did videos early on because of the distance, because, you know,
yeah,
they had to
yeah.
send things to Europe and America. So, you know,
I think that's why. I've read a book tried to start a reading book by Luke Haynes, who was in The Auteurs.
Mm.
He mentioned the Go-Betweens were around a lot, and he always felt it was sad that they never, you know, made it a bit big, you know, or just were more known.
So to the final pick, and I guess apparently one of the biggest.
No, but it's their most known song, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Streets of Your Town. I just could not pick this just because it's just so... there's just something about it. Anyway, there's a good quote from Amanda Brown, who's obviously Grant's partner at the time. She mm-hmm. said it's a widely misunderstood song in the same vein as something like Born in the USA. People think it's a kind of patriotic sentiment. It's actually very dark, and the lyrics about butchers, knives and battered wives. There's a lot more awareness yes. of domestic violence now. So it's a very relevant song. Yeah, despite being its their most glossy song and their biggest tune, it wasn't a hit, still in number 70, even in the Australian charts, and only 80 in the UK. And the band broke up in acrimony in 1989, not long after, you know, the year after their best album, 16 Lovers Lane. So, I suppose it's something, like I was saying before, the kind of revealing of when you first hear this, you're like, yeah, that's a nice tune. And then, like, the more you listen to it and the more you sort of examine the details and the sort of the talking about the buildings being pulled down, there's kind of a, you know, there's domestic violence in there. You know, there's just sudden jolts of a bit like the Smiths, where they'll just hit you with like this, but in a different way to the Smiths, because Morrissey's so, like, you know, he's so flamboyant, or he's so, the way he delivers it is so different. Whereas with Grant McKellen, he's just delivering it like, the same as he was delivering a sort of tender sentiment, you know.
Definitely, yeah. I think with Smith, you're listening out for that, aren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Sort of. Whereas this is like, you know, the town is full of battered wives and stuff like that. These lines are just real key. But yeah, the tune as well. A lot of people love this song. You know, it has been voted one of the best Australian songs, you know, in retrospect. So they've kind of like had another life with this song and the album as well. You know, as I said before. But yeah. It's just a beautiful song, and it's got that kind of very Australian, vivid. Again, the song's bridge, shut it down, they pulled it down, is a sentiment that Brisbane people would of that generation would really feel, because a lot of their beloved buildings were torn down in the dead of night. And so I suppose it's got that kind of darker underbelly as a song than you actually would ever... If you just hear it, then you would ever realise, if that makes sense.
They said that a lot of his album was helped by John Willstead, the new bassist, and they also
It's a lot richer than anything else they ever did, and glossy.
Getting more layers, definitely.
It's very shiny. It's very I'm trying to get a copy.
I was like, oh, but it sounds like I think the band fucking hate him, but
they hate the production he did on it. He made their best album, so yeah.
He said that Lindy Morrison was crap at drumming. There's like a documentary on that album. It's on YouTube, and he's quite. You can tell that he doesn't give a shit. He says, "I hated the Go-Betweens. I don't know why I joined the band."
why would you do that to yourself?
He then says, "I knew Lindy from being a punk band called Zero, but she hadn't got any better at drumming." And being a bassist with a shit drummer is not a happy place. So he said that he just enjoyed experimenting in the studio. But I was like, okay, you're quite brash. But this regarding the song. So I really love the verse, but I'm not a fan of the lyric round and round, up and down. It feels too nurse run for me, and that grates on me a little bit. I love her backing up when she sings. She's saying "shine," is she in the background? Yeah. Amanda. Yeah. So I like that. I like the melody of, but yeah, that chorus, it kind of, it's maybe a bit too sweet, a bit too nursery rhyme, and I find it hard to jump on board. And obviously, I'm a Crowded House fan, so I'm used to quite over melodic tracks. But yeah, they always seem to have that guitar sound again, sort of stands out. I've listened to the whole album, and this is a strong album. And yeah, there's other songs I would have.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I could have done. Like Love Goes On, I really like that one.
Yeah, it's a good track.
That is a good track. But I suppose I just picked this because you just can't. It's the same with Catlin Kane. It's like, how can you do five songs without including this? It's just, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It is a bit. That's what I was trying to say. That it is like, it's one of those ones. Again, it's like the more you listen to. And again, it's the album, really. It fits on the album just beautifully, you know. So there you go. I think it's more the album that's actually the recommendation than just this song.
Do they have any like more like electric guitar going for it sort of tracks, or is it always a bit more
earlier on? The Tallulah album is, it's got that balance of like post-punk and more of these kind of melodic songs, yeah, for sure. Like there's one I nearly picked that like maybe more Echo and the Bunnymen, as I said, you know, there's almost like an Echo and the Bunnymen feel to it. But then that was that era, wasn't it? There was a lot of bands who were good, like the Waterboys as well, you know. Yeah. So that kind of like big sound with the strings. Yet you've got like that post-punk kind of influence still.
Babs?
Okay, well, so the guitar solo to me sounds exactly like the guitar on What Do You Want From Me by Monaco. Exactly the same.
And again, the New Order influence.
That's why I was like, you know, the hooky bass was obvious, but... But really, go back and listen to it, and then go and listen to What Do You Want From Me. Cool. It sounds exactly the same. So this one, you know, it started jangly, but it didn't put me off completely. And on repeated listenings, I really appreciated the lush atmosphere that's created by the song. Like that, yeah, that wore me down, let's say. And I quite like the harmonies. But like Fran, I had issues with the lyrics, but not the same ones. Maybe on reflection of the time, I really dislike the lyrics, watch the butcher shine his knives and this town is full of battered wives, because it hits you like a freight train. And I was like, it sounds a bit crass, to be honest. Like, it sounds like he's like, oh, I'm trying to evoke life in a small town. Oh, let's talk about the small business owner and the battered wives. But I think you made the point there, Bill, that this was 1988. And yeah. I think, yeah, maybe domestic violence wasn't... I was literally having this conversation yesterday because I did a module in my master's called the social psychology of health communication, and we talked about like trying to make domestic violence a public issue rather than a private one, because that's how it was seen. So yeah, I think I take your point there, that maybe it isn't as crass as I initially
maybe
thought.
It's trying to say there's like this underbelly to the city that might seem all nice on the surface, but then it's like this sudden and I think that's what's surprising about it. Yeah, because it's so shiny as a song. It's like this, and like you said, that nursery rhyme element to it. But then it's got these kind of, and I suppose that is, you know, that's the essence of indie pop in a way, is like those two competing, you know, factors really. You know, it's like that darkness set against that kind of more tunefulness, you know, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was my second favorite after Cattle and Kane. So yeah, I think there's levels of jangle, and this passes the jangle test for me.
I think Baxter's Kiss was my favorite on the playlist, but I really liked Finding You, which is 2005.
Yeah, that's the one I mentioned before. That's their last great song, I think. Mm. That's very direct. That's very direct in a way that a lot of this stuff isn't really. Anyway.
Was that a hit at all? Do you know what was it played on?
Well, I think it was you know, like indie sort of level hit, you know, but not like a hit, top 40 hit, you know, just not that kind of band really. But like, you know, sort of big, actually probably bigger in retrospect. I don't know. You can tell me with the Spotify numbers than they were.
I do have them up. So what's your guess, sir? After hearing that NXS have 10 million, what's your guess for Rahm and Gobertrude?
I know, so I'm going to tap out.
Is this a month?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it could just be one song. I think,
I'll go a million, maybe.
148,000.
Oh, harsh. Yeah. Harsh.
So,
but actually, interesting. Interesting, because not all of their albums are on there.
I mean, does that mean that their fans are more vinyl?
Or listening on YouTube or something. But even their like fan club has only got like 8,000. So they're not like a big band, really. But they're more like, you know, they're one of those names to drop. Do you know what I mean? They're like, you know, have you ever listened to the Go-Betweens? You know, it's like sort of this kind of, they're the cult band of cult bands, you know. That's why I picked them, really. They are. They're the perfect underappreciated band, really, you know. So there you go. That's why I picked them.
So I guess you should ask a question. So I would go to Babs first. Babs, the Go-Betweens, underrated?
I would say, I'm very sorry, but no. With a heavy heart, especially when I hear that it's difficult to get a copy of their album. And yeah, like, they have as few listeners as they do, but I'm like...
It didn't blow you away.
It didn't blow me away. But let's summarize it. I don't think they are underrated, but they are worth giving time to. That's for sure. So if you listen to one of, you know, this playlist and you don't get it immediately, I would say it is worth repeated listenings. Okay, on those repeated listenings, there's nothing... I think if there had been like maybe one song that really hooked me in, I wouldn't have said so. But yeah, I didn't want to save any of them. So I'm very sorry, Bill.
Okay.
But I think
it's
Fran
okay.
might have a
I don't take opinion. It personally. It's cool.
I'm glad.
So yeah, I would say underrated because, yeah, I mean, I didn't know any of your songs. Okay, and yeah. I've been in their world for the past 2 days watching interviews and documentaries. I think Robert Forster's a beautiful man. I think that Grant has written some beautiful songs. Yeah, they haven't got that magic, maybe, which they needed. But I think they got, you know, definitely enough to have at least a top 40 here, at least, you know. Yeah. Or...
When you consider what's been top 40, I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised that more people haven't like included the songs in the, like TV or films or anything.
I think they've
hand.
Been on a couple.
We've got a hand up
so,
here.
So I wasn't listening to your playlist on Spotify, Bill. I was listening to it on Tidal, so I was kind of finding the songs. And Cattle and Cain on Tidal is on the soundtrack for this Italian film called Amanda that I'd seen the trailer. It looks really good. I haven't seen it yet. But I got very confused because... So I pressed listen to it. It's the second to last song on the soundtrack. And then the next song is a song by Jarvis Cocker. And I was like, I'd forgotten that I hadn't put the song next. So it's Elvis Has Left the Building by Jarvis Cocker. And I was like, God, this singer is sounding really like Jarvis Cocker. And I was like, oh no, that is actual Jarvis Cocker. But I was like, oh, if for a band like this to be on an Italian film where... It's also kind of promoted as like with a new song by Jarvis Cocker. I was very intrigued. I remember seeing the trailer for this and really being intrigued by it. But yeah, so yeah, I think in some places, yes, there still are.
Bill, we touched on your website and your podcast. Yeah. Do you have anything specific you want to plug or?
Just the website really. And just like the work that people do on it. And like, yeah, you can check us out on socials at God Is In The TV. And on Twitter, and we're on Facebook, God Is In The TV Zine. And this is the podcast as well. Give it a chance. We do, so that's the format of it. But we also do like a one where we talk about a year in music as well and give our like favorite song, our clunker, and our underrated song. So that's quite fun as well. And we've done a few of those. So yeah, I'm trying to think what else I'm plugging at the moment. Actually, I'm doing PR for a band as well. But...
Go for it.
The Goer Express, yes. You know them?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of a, I don't know how you describe it. It's quite, it's kind of supergrass, kind of meets the Lars or something. I don't know. Quite sort of indie band.
I saw them at a festival and I think they're perfect to discover at a festival.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good fun indie band. They're young guys. Actually, it's quite cool because like I did like a single for them like 4 years ago. It's another thing I do is PR like for the last probably like 15 years, and they've got a lot bigger since then. They come back to me for their album, so that was nice of them.
Hey.
Yeah, so that was cool. To sort of, it was like an affirmation that I'd done a decent job at the time. But yeah, hard work. PR's hard work because you send out hundreds of emails and you get like 10 or 20%. Reply rate, so it's it's a lot of emailing.
I have done media relations in my time and I'm glad that I don't do it anymore.
It's tough.
So, yeah. I wanted to ask you at the beginning, like how has it been keeping that going in such a changing media landscape in a place where really even kind of legacy media people don't want to pay anything for? Is it passion? Is it having
passion.
A good team?
Passion and having like a team of people who just really love it, you know, I guess. That's the only thing that's kept us going, really. And like favors from people, and like I suppose like that's why I do the PR as well. In a way, it's like it's that kind of funds my passion in a way. PR in a way, a bit like music journalism. It's like it's going to change in the next 10 years anyway, because you got like things like AI. You've got things like you know, you've got all these platforms that are springing up where you can just submit music to it. You know, so in a way, I feel like we need a new solution rather than just like emailing people all the time. You know what I mean? And I guess it's like building relationships with them, really, you know, because that's the main thing, isn't it? Like whatever you're doing, if you're working in music, then, you know, if you get to know other people who are working in music, then, you know, let's do something together. It's that kind of thing, really, rather than I'm pitching you, you know. It's so much better when you meet people we're also into music, you know, whatever way that is.
Yes.
Fran, any other death and shagging stats or anything else that you want to add?
No, I can email you if you want me to. I can have some sort of a monthly newsletter. But no, thank you for listening to the podcast. I'll try and dig into some more go-betweens. And yeah, and NSS had some hits before Kick, guys. Check them out. And thanks again, Bill, for coming on.
Cheers.
And, till next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode. And thanks again to our guest, Bill Cummings. For further listening on the band In Excess, why not listen to Don't Change? I think we mentioned that. Also, check out The One Thing, Just Keep Walking, and Disappear are my top picks. If you want to recommend any other songs by either band or some future topics for us to chat about on the podcast, please get in touch with us. We are on social media. But where are you? Well, we're currently on Twitter, /X, at OU Music Pod, and the same on Blue Sky. Or you can find us on Instagram at @OverUnderratedMusicPod. Or you can even send us an email at @OverUnderratedMusicPod@gmail.com. Until next time, guys, goodbye.